Hi, thanks everyone for coming to the talk. So what we're going to discuss today, we're going to discuss about containers. What is the attack surface of containers? It's probably going to be a rehash of some ideas you have heard in the previous talk, so that's very interesting. We're going to discuss about some known attacks and mitigations. We're going to see Danger Zone and GVisor. Danger Zone will be like our reference project in order to understand how containers work and can be attacked. And we're going to see how we integrated those projects. Quick word about me. I'm a software engineer for Freedom of the Press Foundation, and I'm a maintainer of the Danger Zone project. And quick word about the Freedom of the Press Foundation. We are a US nonprofit. We do several things regarding press rights. We train journalists in order to keep them safe. We do some advocacy for press freedom rights. We track press freedom violations. Probably we're going to track a bit more in the coming years. And we build security-sensitive tools for journalists, like SecureDrop. I don't know if everyone knows SecureDrop. And DangerZone, which is the other tool we're having. So I keep talking about DangerZone. Let's see what that is. You can see it on the left side live. In practice, it's an open source tool that was written in 2020 by Michael Lee. If you don't know the name, it's the guy who did OPSEC for the Snowden leaks. So it's pretty cool. It's been maintained since 2022 by Freedom of the Press Foundation. It was originally written in order to help journalists on The Intercept, which is a US publication, sanitize some documents that they got from their sources. It's basically a desktop application. It runs on macOS, Windows, Linux, because that's what journalists tend to use. And it basically takes a suspicious PDF. It passes it through a sandbox, and then it gets back, let's say, a safe PDF. This is not a novel idea by any means. It's been used, well, in the Army, but besides the Army, it's been used in CubesOS, which is a very interesting operating system. It has this trusted PDF feature, and the main logic behind DangerZone is there. Unlike CubesOS, which uses the Xen hypervisor and disposable VMs, we are using containers in order to achieve that. I'll briefly explain how DangerZone works. So you have some suspicious docs. You pass them to DangerZone, which is the application. But that application does not open the docs. And that's important, because they may be malicious. What it does do, though, is that it spawns a container. It passes the docs through the stdin of that container. And it gets back, not a safe PDF, but it gets back pixels. And that's because you don't know what's going on that sandbox. It may have been compromised due to the docs. So what you want to have is like a very dumb format of that original document. And that's just RGB pixels, three channels of color, and all that. We then recreate the original document from said pixels, page by page. And by doing that, there's this analog call where essentially, we believe that every malware and every metadata has been erased. The resulting document is not that easy to work with, so we do some OCR extra so that you can select text and all that. As you can see, the containers and their security properties are really important for us. Else, our users are in danger. And we're talking about users who are being targeted by some serious people. So the question here, some would say here, and that was, again, the case of the previous talk, that containers are good, but for security-sensitive workloads, they may not contain as well. And that's true. I agree with that. But we have to think of the alternative. The alternative is that our users will just open the document in the laptop, and we don't want that. So unfortunately, or fortunately, we are in a position where we have to do some harm reduction. You're going to open that file in any case, so try to open it by us, where we use containers so it's easier to install in your macOS Windows laptop. But at the same time, we'll try to keep you as safe as possible by doing what? By trying to identify what is the attack surface of a container, and trying to figure out ways to reduce this attack surface. We cannot completely nullify it, we are well aware of that, but we at least can reduce it. So the very first thing we should have in mind, and I'm going to talk about mitigations here as well, is that you cannot have arbitrary code execution in a container if there are no software bugs in your product. Does this happen? No. So what the first mitigation that comes to mind is that you need to constantly scan your container image and regularly update it. On the bottom left, you can see an exploit that could affect LibreOffice at some point. There was a specific CVE for that. We caught that through security scanning, and we issued an update very quickly. Now, second vector is network access. And usually, most containers are connected to the internet, so it doesn't apply to most people. But here's something interesting. There's this concept called canary tokens. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but there are, let's say, silent alarms that you can put in documents. Usually, they are triggered by Acrobat BTF, so not by other viewers. But in principle, you open a document. The document tries to fetch a resource from the internet. And that resource is controlled by the owner of the document. This way, people can know if what you are viewing right now, if you are viewing actually a sensitive document, if there is any unauthorized view of that document. If you are a journalist, you want to leave no traces of such a thing. So mitigation here, disable networking if your container does not need that. Okay, so now the first two things were pretty simple. Let's go to some more juicy stuff. Third attack vector, it's the OCI runtime itself. The OCI runtimes are usually in a kind of a privileged position in the sense that they are written in memory safe languages, Go, Rust, we have seen already. And also, they tend to set the stage, they tend to create the namespaces, create the C groups, fork, and then let the Linux kernel do the rest of the protections. That's the theory. In practice, there have been bugs in OCI runtimes, either letting the user, the container, the containerized process take advantage, exploit the actual runtime, or access resources while being containerized, like the host file system when it shouldn't. So in order to protect the OCI runtime, well, of course you can run rootless Docker, Podman, Usernetes. I'm not sure, probably no one does that, but there's this option. But in practice, for end user laptops and all that, even rootless Podman, you're still UID 1000. UID 1000 can practically read your Firefox history, passwords, whatever, so it's not a super good mitigation. Fun fact, for people who are using Podman, just so you know, a good thing to do is to disable logging if you haven't done already for sensitive workloads, because if that workload is sending output to stdout, it's logged in your journal CTL. Now, what happens if the process somehow escapes, or not actually escapes, but sees a view of the host file system? There are some mitigations for that as well. Of course, SELinux is a very good mitigation. Having the process not gain any new privileges is also important as well. What's also pretty important is to note that the UID0 root within the namespace usually maps to the user who created that namespace outside that container. So you have to restrict it somehow. It's best to create containers using a different user than UID0 within that. So -u is one thing. And Podman 4 and later has this very cool user NS nomap flag in which there is no user from outside the container, from outside the namespace, that is mapped within that container. So practically, there is no correlation between users outside the container and within it, and that's very good. And of course, dropping all capabilities, you'd be surprised at how many CVEs can be mitigated by no capabilities in the container. Of course, your workload may have may need those capabilities. In our case, Dendrazone needed none. So that was interesting. We're talking about the OSHA runtime. That's a that's an attack vector, but let's face it, the biggest attack vector, it's the Linux kernel. You can't do much there. If there's a buffer overflow or something on the Linux kernel, then it's kind of game over. And there's bound to be, because it has like a very vast attack surface area. What you can do here is that you can, there are ways to profile and trace your workload, which will create a second filter, which will have a more restricted set of syscalls, only the ones that your workload has used in real time. This may not be accurate, but it's a good starting point to fine-tune some stuff. The less syscalls your workload is allowed to do, in theory, basically reduces the attack surface of the Linux kernel. So that's a big thing. And by default, the default second filter has quite a lot of syscalls enabled because it needs to adapt to most workloads out there. And finally, there's the vector of hardware bugs, Spectre, Meltdown, and all those types of vulnerabilities. Historically, VMs were not able to isolate the workload and not exploit those bugs. So mitigation, either burn your laptop or use a burner laptop, pick your poison, whatever, but there's not a good mitigation here. So we have like, we know we want to use containers because it's easier for your users, and we know some ways to reduce the attack surface, but still, there is the Linux kernel out there, there is the OSHA runtime, and ideally, in Dendrazone Lab, we would like to isolate the containerized process from those things. We will sleep better at night, let's say. So can we do better? This is where gVisor comes into play. Now, some talks I've talked about before. I'll mention a few things real quick. gVisor is a Google project. It was written in 2014, open sourced in May 2018. It's written in Go. It's available only on Linux. And it has an OCR runtime, RunSC, which can take a rootfs path and a container image and create a container out of it. Now, what's different from the typical container runtimes is that it's also an application kernel. And what it does, it's very interesting. It intercepts system calls, and it re-implements them, or it re-implements them, and it does that in Go.